You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later, we'll celebrate 100 years of the National Park Service and look ahead at the challenges facing the parks in the coming years.
First, tensions between communities and law enforcement seem to be boiling over in many parts of the country, leading to protests and, in some cases, to violence. Most recently, crowds took to the streets in Milwaukee to protest the shooting death of an armed man by a police officer. There's a growing sense that more needs to be done to get law enforcement and their communities talking to each other in order to ease tensions and come up with lasting solutions.
While things are far from perfect between police and civilians here in Wisconsin, one of the most striking examples of reconciliation took place here in recent years. It involved the head of the state's police union and the father of a man shot and killed by law enforcement. Despite their obvious differences, the two were able to come together and find common ground, leading to the passage of the law that mandates independent investigations of officer-involved deaths, a law that's widely seen as one of the most progressive of its kind in the country. Now, in a story that ran in the most recent Politico magazine, the two are sharing their story in hopes that their success can be replicated across the country.
Jim Palmer and Michael Bell are joining us now. Jim is the executive director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. And Jim, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Michael Bell is with us as well. He's an activist and a retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Air Force. Michael, welcome.
Thank you, Veronica, for having me on your show.
And Michael, we're going to start with you because this story, in many ways, it starts with you. You've been on the show sharing your story before, but for those who are hearing you for the first time, can you briefly tell the story of what happened with your son?
In 2004, I had a son that was coming home from a night out with friends. He was met in front of his home by a police officer. There was some discussion. My son was under the influence. Eventually, my son was tased, and he ran to the back of the house. An officer and my son had a physical confrontation. Eventually, an officer screamed, "He has my gun," but family members saw Michael with his hands behind his back, cuffed. And at that point, another officer placed a gun directly to Michael's temple and took his life. And I essentially questioned what had gone on, because within 48 hours, the department had reviewed itself and cleared itself of wrongdoing.
And you were used to the way the National Transportation Safety Board conducted investigations. You were surprised at the way the investigation unfolded.
I was surprised. I flew the KC-135, which was a Boeing 707, and so therefore I had a tremendous amount of aviation experience, and I studied accident investigations to make sure that myself and others stayed alive. And I was expecting a National Transportation Safety Board type investigation, but that didn't occur.
And thank you for sharing that. I know it's still not an easy story, so years later, thank you. And Jim, I want to turn to you now. From a law enforcement perspective, Michael at that point began his life as an activist and a father, and he started to raise questions. He started to go public with those questions. What was your first reaction when you started to see his role in this?
Well, the first time I heard the name Michael Bell was, I believe, in 2005. Our organization is the state's largest law enforcement group. Annually issues service awards to officers that have gone above and beyond the call of duty. And the officers in Kenosha that were involved in Michael's son's altercation were among those being recognized at our annual event. And Mike had taken out ads in numerous national newspapers, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, and others, to publicly criticize the organization for doing so. And that was my first exposure to Michael Bell. And in the years from 2005 to about 2012, he was increasingly involved public media campaign, using billboards and television advertisements and other measures to draw awareness to the issue and the question as to whether or not law enforcement agencies should investigate themselves.
And was that a question you had asked yourself before, as someone who was a leader in law enforcement? Had you asked why law enforcement investigated themselves?
Well, and there were some practical reasons. In a lot of cases, they're historical in nature. These larger agencies in particular that have the manpower, that have the expertise and the resources to conduct these investigations, which are complicated endeavors. And I think there was just a real concern about, passing those investigations off to an outside agency. And there was maybe a real proprietary sense about those investigations. And it took a number of years, and largely due to Michael's public efforts to draw awareness to the issue, and that helped initiate a discussion.
And I know at some point, you two were not on cordial terms. There was tension between the two of you. Michael had initiated a billboard that you felt unfairly maybe represented officers under investigation. And it's sort of at this time where, Michael, you decided, you know, I'm gonna be audacious. I'm gonna try to meet with this man and see if we can see eye to eye. Tell me about that first meeting and how it happened.
There was a local shooting here in Madison, and I was in Madison to assist with bringing some awareness to the situation, and I was actually driving up John Nolan Drive past the WPPA, and I was on the phone with one of our team members. And she said to me, she says, why don't you stop in and say hello to Jim Palmer?
Almost as a joke, right?
Almost as a joke. And my first reaction was no way in capital letters. But then I had been studying people that had made great change. Gandhi and George Patton was one of those people. And I remember him saying, audacity, audacity, always audacity. And I said, I am going to step out my comfort zone, and I'm going to go into that parking lot, and I'm going to see if Jim Palmer's there at the WPPA.
And Jim, there you are. You're in your office. This is someone who's you're not necessarily on friendly terms with. What made you decide to see him?
Well, we had had, I think, one initial exchange or set of exchanges via email, and it was pretty, there was some animosity. We weren't very happy with some of the billboards that he was running at the time in the Madison area, and obviously, you know, he has his concerns that he had been expressing over many years. And, you know, it was in that initial exchange that, you know, we talked about the possibility of possibly meeting. Michael had raised the issue, and I said that I would be happy to, and I thought there was value in that, but it's not something I was going to do at the tip of a spear, and I just couldn't do it and maintain the credibility of officers across the state that we represent while these billboards were up. And so when he showed up in my office, we kind of had rehashed, I think, a lot of that same discussion. And
But in a civil way.
It was in civil. It was certainly face-to-face. But shortly after that meeting, he had agreed to, you know, let those initial billboards run out. I think he initially had contemplated having longer runs in addition to the initial ones. And that opened the doorway for us to begin to meet and to start to build trust and to build a dialogue.
We're talking with Jim Palmer right now and Michael Bell. Their story is featured in an article for Politico magazine. It's called Reaching Across the Thin Blue Line, How the Head of a Police Union, that's Jim Palmer, and the father of his son killed by a police officer, Michael Bell, found common cause. And building trust. So there you are. There's not necessarily a lot of trust to begin with. You have to build this from the ground up. Michael, how did you begin to do it?
Laughingly, I just told Jim, I says, "What if I would have said to him 3 years ago when we first met for the first time that we were going to be in WPPR doing an interview together, we would never have believed it." But Jim and I sat down, and to Jim's credit, he listened to me as a father. He has his own sons. And I also listened to Jim about his love and deep love and respect for the people that wear a uniform. But we had a common bond. He has a brother that's an Air Force officer. And being an Air Force officer myself, we saw each other as human beings. And we sat down. We had some dialogue. And he essentially said to me, he says, if the billboards are down, we might be able to have some dialogue about the laws that you seek, because I talked with him about the National Transportation Safety Board issues that I was looking at.
And Jim, was it that for you that enabled you to reach across this divide, that the brotherhood of both being fathers, respecting people in uniform, that began it for you as well?
I think that was one of many critical turning points in that our initial meeting after his audacious meeting. Where we hear a lot around the country about the need for people to show empathy to one another, and the NYPD commissioner Bill Bratton recently said we need to recognize each other's humanity. But I don't really think we know what that means to a large extent. And for us, it was just recognizing that we're fathers before we're anything else, and kind of build off that common feature that we shared. And being able to set aside our animosity and frustrations and using that as a platform to open up to one another, get to know one another, and to be able to share our perspectives with one another was, I think, was a real launching pad.
And Michael, you're not just a father, you're an activist. And you got together at a certain point, and it's just more than this common trust, although that's, nothing could have happened without that, but you wanted to affect change. So how did the two of you begin to talk about reform, changing the way things were done?
We actually sat at the conference table over at the WPPA headquarters. He sat on one side, I sat on another, and we talked about concepts that I felt should be introduced. And then he would turn around and either poke holes in them, or he would say, yeah, that's not a bad idea. We might be able to do that. Jim would share with me the inside workings of legislation and law enforcement, and I shared with him my perspective on how pilots avoid from crashing aircraft and what the investigations are like when they do. And so that's what Jim and I had done together, and it was a process that took months, and there were some cancellations, and then there were some additional shootings within the state and so forth. Those were all awkward moments for us, but we maintained a high level of respect, and we kept working together.
And Jim, just briefly, here you are, you're the executive director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. What do your colleagues make of you sitting down with this person who's been putting up these billboards that have been upsetting to some people? How do you get them to understand what you're after?
Well, I am blessed to serve at the pleasure of a 27-member board of directors of officers, rank-and-file officers that are elected across the state. And they recognize that as the state's largest law enforcement group, we really had an obligation to maintain an open mind and to be willing to explore whether or not things could be done better. And, there are other law enforcement groups, I think, that they raise an eyebrow and were unsure of where this was going to go or what the motivations were. And so there was some of that for sure. But at the end of the day, we had an organization that was committed to fulfilling a kind of a societal sense of responsibility that we feel we have given our size.
And the end result, legislation that was groundbreaking for Wisconsin and for the nation, and we'll get to that when we come back. We're talking right now with Michael Bell and Jim Palmer. The story they wrote is featured in Politico magazine. It's called Reaching Across the Thin Blue Line, How the Head of a Police Union and the Father of a Son Killed by a Police Officer Found Common Cause.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think law enforcement and community members can best engage in productive dialogue? What issues need to be brought to the table? Who needs to be the one to start these conversations? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up that conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking right now with Michael Bell and Jim Palmer. Their story is featured in an article for Politico magazine called Reaching Across the Thin Blue Line, How the Head of a Police Union and the Father of a Son Killed by a Police Officer Found Common Cause. They're sharing their story in hopes that other communities can replicate their success.
You can join us now at 800-642-1234. How do you think law enforcement and community members can best engage in productive dialogue? And what are the biggest issues do you think that require attention? Call us at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Michael, ultimately, the two of you, Jim Palmer and yourself, worked on legislation that would go on to become law in 2014. And this is the bill that mandates independent investigations into officer-involved deaths, and the first statewide bill of its kind and in the nation. Didn't come necessarily easily. As we heard, there's already a long backstory, but then there were roadblocks once you got to this point where the two of you were on the same page. Michael, what did it take to get this bill passed?
Well, it took, as Representative Gary Bies once said, he said this thing was on life support a number of times. It took a lot of hard work, and I remember having to make a decision one morning to take out very expensive advertising in USA Today to tell millions of people what we were doing here in Wisconsin, and imagine trying to make a very expensive decision like without even contacting your spouse about it, because I knew she was going to have no part of it. I would go into legislation office and they would say Jim Palmer was here today, and I'd go in another legislator's office and he says Jim Palmer was here today. Jim practically had to go into every single legislator's office at the Capitol to tell tell them that the WPPA supported this bill because they were petrified of being labeled as anti-reform law enforcement.
Jim, do you remember that time going to knocking on a lot of doors, making the case? Was it a tough sell at the time?
It's always a tough sell. I mean, this legislation was introduced in, I believe, August of 2013, and the legislative session ends in April of 2014. And so that's a pretty small window, and it's not uncommon for bills when they're introduced in the state legislature to, have to go through a couple 2-year legislative cycles before they actually see the light of day and get a vote. And so it was an arduous process. One of the things that we did that was helpful is we conduct a statewide poll every year through the St. Norbert College Strategic Research Institute, and we polled on this issue specifically. And it was something well over 80% of the public supported the independent investigations of these officer-related deaths. And we promoted that through a statewide media tour and with legislative offices all across the Capitol. And I think that helped in conjunction with the efforts that that Michael was taking.
So it came from both sides here, and you had bipartisan support for this bill as well. So,
which is also very unusual. I mean, obviously, it's a very not just in Wisconsin but nationally, it's a very partisan, ideologically divisive environment, and so it's pretty extraordinary.
Madison's own representative, Chris Taylor, was on the Democratic side. She was a human rights advocate, and on the other side, we had Representative Gary Bies, who was a Republican, retired chief deputy sheriff from the Door County region. So, they kept everybody at peace.
And Michael, I'm curious. In conjunction with Jim Palmer's efforts there, knocking on doors, talking about this survey, what did that ad say that you placed in USA Today?
The ad said that that Wisconsin tragedies mirrored national problems. And we brought to light that Frank Serpico, the famous NYPD detective that Al Pacino made a movie regarding his life, endorsed our reforms. You have to understand that this type of legislation is very, very difficult to pass. Ferguson, Missouri, happened about 4 months after we passed this legislation, and they've twice introduced our bill word for word down there, and they couldn't even get it out of committee. I testified down at the Capitol in Jefferson City. I had also gone to New Jersey and spoke with legislators there, word for word. They couldn't even get it out of committee. I am telling you that when I testified in front of the President's Task Force on Policing, I saw other union leaders, and I can tell you right now that I think that we were very fortunate to have a forward-thinking leader at the WPPA to do this. And right now, between body cameras and this legislation, Wisconsin looks pretty darn good.
We've definitely made some gains, and obviously there are, as we saw in Milwaukee a few weeks ago, there are others to make, and they're not all law enforcement related, but law enforcement, I think, needs to be an integral part of that discussion.
And this law has been in effect since 2014?
That's correct.
And what do you think the result is so far? Both of you, why don't we start with you, Jim, since you're with the Professional Police Association.
Sure, and we represent most of the officers that are involved in these sensitive situations year in and year out, and I think that the law has really helped maintain the public's trust and credibility in these investigations, and because these are these impact deeply, and not only loved ones of someone who's shot by a law enforcement officer, but the community. It can rock a community, and so to know that it's going to be independently and transparently investigated in a way that for the most part isn't done anywhere else around the country, with the exception of two other states, I think is very helpful, and it's something that protects both the public and law enforcement officers alike.
And Michael, what's your take?
Well, it was a little bit hard to implement because once it occurred, you had a shooting here in Dane County, and then you had a Dontre Hamilton shooting in Milwaukee on the same day, and it took a lot of effort to get it done. One of the things that I'm really proud of is that Governor Walker, in his budget, included additional money for the Department of Justice so they can bring in their own investigators, because now the load was being placed on the Department of Justice. Those are little steps along the way that got us to where we are today. There was one, for the first time in the history of Wisconsin, there was a firing of an officer in Milwaukee procedurally, but I think it adds a lot of credibility to law enforcement and the community.
And I want to ask you both, we're at a time today when relations between police and communities, the communities that they police, are under stress and under scrutiny, sometimes under extreme stress in some cases. Do you see the process that the two of you went through, seeing each other? I think, Jim, you said recognizing the humanity in each other, and from there, working on policy and change. Do you see that as a template for the rest of the country?
I truly do. I think, first and foremost, there are some lessons that can be gained from our experience. One is that people need to recognize the need for relationships. And once you recognize that those relationships are needed, then you can work on building them. And empathy is a critical building block in those relationships. And then that just helps facilitate a dialogue. And I think that's enormously constructive to the problems that are facing our country and where we need to go on a broader scale.
And I think that this is a great way to approach this. Jim recently told me that he would be open to having dialogues with professions of other high-hazard occupations to see if there's anything that could be learned from those professions. I would like to have a national conference right here in the state of Wisconsin because I think we're the leader in this, and we can bring in people from the NTSB, we can bring in people from the United States Air Force Training Academies and allow them to talk to law enforcement and see if there's anything that can occur and we can improve the situation from.
And the two of you, this is, you said, your first interview together.
It is. We've done joint interviews where we've been interviewed separately, but this is the first time sitting side by side. So
just a couple of seconds left. What do you want people to take away going forward?
I would like them to read the article in Politico. And the other thing is please keep an open mind that law enforcement is a very tough job. We respect law enforcement, but we don't accept a bad policing. And I think an NTSB model might be one of our solutions going forward.
I think across the country, we need to be open to, we talk about the need for a dialogue, and we see that a lot throughout the country, but it just hasn't started in earnest in many places. And I think, by recognizing the need for a relationship and exercising some empathy, that would be enormously helpful.
Thank you both so much for joining us today in studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Jim Palmer and Michael Bell. Jim's the executive director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. Michael is an activist, father, and a retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Air Force. Their article featured in Politico magazine is called Reaching Across the Thin Blue Line.